A long time? Felt like a long time.
At a seminar. Did it feel like more quiet than you're used to? Yeah. It's hard to find quiet anymore, isn't it? We have to opt out of the noise. It used to be you had to sort of opt into it. And now we have to cultivate the discipline of opting out of the images through the internet, of the noise, through various the advertisements. It's a constant bombardment. I think that spiritual life has never been a greater challenge than it is right now. I'm sure there were distractions before too, but this is a particular moment of attention deficit culture. Sometimes at my desk I'll light a candle, even though I'm sitting, you know, maybe typing with a computer, and I've now started to like to write by hand like we're doing today. But I think lighting a candle is a way of sort of delineating light from darkness too, and just to make it to be mindful of that, this as a sacred time with yourself and the Lord. Did some of you, if you're willing to share, see any patterns emerge that you weren't previously aware of in your life?
Yeah. I can share. My name's Stephen. One of the things I was reflecting on as I was going through my story was the prominent place very friendly people had in my life. And just kind of going through, a lot of my significant memories had to do with places that I felt like more warmly welcomed than elsewhere, or places where there was a friendly person who provided me, I guess, relief in kind of a place where I felt uncomfortable or dislocated. So I spent some time kind of exploring, like, both kind of why those were such memorable times and some of the ways that they shaped them.
Wow, that's so cool. It speaks to us about the power of hospitality as a spiritual gift in welcoming others, making safe spaces for other people in your homes, but it's also something you take with you by just a smile. Mother Teresa was asked by professors leaving Calcutta. The professor said, "Is there any suggestions you have for us?" They were Americans. She said, "I have one." "What's that?" "That you smile at one another more." It's the gift of warmth and hospitality. And you're saying that's a significant pattern or thread in your life. That's really neat. Anyone else like to share? Yes.
I wrote down maybe 20 things and realized that the most important thing in my life happened when I was 5 years old and never really thought much about that.
Wow. When you were five.
I didn't hear that.
When he was five, the most significant thing happened, and he didn't previously know that. I was with my mother and brother a few years ago. My brother was 48 years old, and something came up, and after 43 years, he took that moment to say to my mom, "Mom, am I the reason Grandpa committed suicide?" He was just, we were both sort of just stunned. And he's been carrying that for 43 years. I know that, and I've since then seen the Lord work that out in his life. She said, "Honey, of course not. Nothing could be farther from the truth. But why do we carry these things, you know?" It's amazing. Thank you did you want to say more about that? Or is that, you don't need to? Okay, thank you. Anyone else like to share? Something surprise you? Okay. Yeah, sure, Peter.
My name is Peter, and one of the significant memories that I was writing about was my brother's death. My brother Andy, who was like a mentor to me, and I wrote about something else different from that. And the other thing was a bit closer to this time, and so I feel like I haven't been able to explore that because like a lot of that is still raw. But with my brother's death happening maybe like 5 years ago, I feel like I have the kind of distance to really think about that. And one of the things that surprised me as I was writing this stuff down is I feel like whenever I go through these memories, like I kind of go over them for the surface. And I feel like here I was able to kind of like peel beneath them if I had enough time to think about little small things. And so one of the memories that came to mind when I was thinking about Andrew was he was like a mentor to me, so he'd always like push me to do well. And he would say, you need to get a 1400 so you can get into, you know, top school like Harvard or Princeton or something like that, right? And it was never really my ambition. I was always kind of like really laid back. And and so the crazy thing is, so I went to the College of Bahamas for my first year, and I transferred to Duke, and now I'm a graduate student at Harvard. And I think back and I'm like, Andrew would be really proud of me. And I had never really had that thought before, like connecting where I am to, you know, the investment that he had in my life. I was just like, okay, I'm at Harvard, okay.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm sure he is proud of you right now. Yes, in fact. Could you speak up a little bit?
Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, it's okay.
I found this process to be very therapeutic. I just felt like God, because you gave us this framework, rather than just writing randomly, just giving a framework and seeing it on a timeline in different sections of your life, I felt like God allowed me to just empty out all the past.
Nice.
So that I feel like he can fill in new things, better things. There's definitely a thread through all this, you know. Even though I grew up in the U.S., I have this love for China, you know, and it's tied to my family. But I was atheist before, and now that God has, you know, taken over my life, you know, I can take all that previous experience, but use it for the Lord, you know.
Wow.
I just feel like this whole conference is, you know, really just emptying out.
That's wonderful. Yeah, a milestone. Well, thank you. Sometimes I think the graph, if we say sort of graph and then jot and then write long, the graph is sort of like going in the hot air balloon at 1,000 feet and looking at our lives and then deciding where we might want to land for a while and then where we might want to land again and then where we might want to travel next. I think it is helpful too. Yes, in the back. Yeah.
Last night's delivery, Mary Kay, she talked about fear.
Uh-huh.
I'm beginning to think now that a significant memory of mine is from a child, I had fear that my mom would die because she was very, very sick when I was in grammar school. And I started to get afraid that she was going to die. And no one was going to be with her. And this lasted like a long time. And of course, we moved away, you know, you moved away. You know, mm-hmm. During the year, she moved away because I'm the only one.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was sick when I talked to her. The doctor said she should be home in a couple of days from the hospital. So she's going to be okay. Then I began to get like really, really sick, really fearful. Oh, she's gonna die, and I'm not gonna be there. She's gonna die. And so that night I left for Jersey. I didn't know when I left for Jersey. And I was there with her when she went.
Mm-hmm.
I kinda like talked to her and sang to her and told a lot of things about growing up and not long for an hour. Then I said to her, I give you permission to go. And I don't know how I said that out.
Yeah.
How that came out, but I remember saying that. And she made this great sign, a smile. And she
wow.
And so I'm very thankful that I was there, that I was allowed by God to be there. And also about all that terrible fear that she talked about that I had all that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that I was trusting, and I guess I was.
Mm-hmm.
right now, this is a very significant moment.
Wonderful. That's my place right now, too, is my mother aging, and I feel very responsible, and I adore. She hung the moon, right? All our moms did. So that's
so
my.
She gave me like a clue. I talked to her just before
yeah,
I left.
Yeah.
And she said, well, you know, you got to stand tall. You've got it in you. Those were her words. You got to stand tall. I might not be here, she said, but you've got to stand tall. I know you can handle everything that comes along. And that gave you like a little hope, but when you're battling fear and all these other things,
it's we need people to speak into our lives, don't we? I don't love friends. The friends I love the most are the friends who tell me my story. When I've taken that path of fear and my life is constricting, they say, "No, Kelly, that's not you, and that's not your story, because your story is this." Oh, oh yeah, we really, really need one another. We really do. Thank you for sharing that. It's profound. And that's that you've spoken into the rest of our lives, those who are younger than you, the two of us, to say, if you have a parent still living, honor that parent, because you cannot imagine what it's going to be like to lose them. Trust us, right? All right. One last person to share with something surprise you. Something you want to write some more about? Want to speak to the Lord about? Maybe tonight, seek someone to pray with up front about. One person in the seminar earlier said, I saw the thread of unforgiveness and that there was a causal chain of choices I made because I was running from my anger and hurt. And now that I can see that, I don't have to make choices because of that hurt anymore, and I can take that to the Lord. Forgiveness is a process, you know, but starting again, baby steps, starting small, and over again is a really good thing. I'll finish by reading what I ended up doing in Finding God Beyond Harvard that opened up the story for me, not only personally. This is this book, but I realized in my own life that it was unforgiveness and what a memory I was avoiding that and running from that had sort of shrunk my life and my future, and how this became a hinge to the future for myself personally, but also for the Veritas Forum that has since grown in six countries and 100 and some universities. And it was because I allowed God, it was because God found me. I didn't do anything. He found me where I was. And this is the tomboy from Ohio who doesn't like the I pronoun. After a decade in Cambridge, I moved to a pine cabin in the woods on Boston's North Shore, in a vast expanse of estuary and ocean. Summers were full of wildflowers, beaches, and tidal currents that challenged my sea kayaking skills. During fiery autumns and frozen winters, hikes, books, and the scent of wood smoke spoke to me. Breathe and rest. Life on that boundary of land and water began for me as an escape from exhaustion and from the city with its omnipresent reminders of a lost love in the age of the almost marriage. I'll skip ahead. In that season of doubt and bitterness, I often went for hikes in the snowy salt marsh at high tide. One day, the sunlight was getting away from me, and I thought I'd catch the last of it. I threw on some Gore-Tex and hiking boots and was off on what I remember as the Red Barn Run. I would go around sort of skirt the neighbor's sheep barn, past the chickens, and out into the tidal marsh. And then as it came back, the tide came in, I would round this red barn and come back to the cabin in under an hour. Tonight was different. A shining planet rose like a jewel beneath the crescent moon. Stars slowly emerged as members in the choir. Songbirds in their snowy pine trees became a timbered chorus of complex and lilting harmonies. The ocean tide slowly rose to the occasion. Earth and sky became the colors of bread and wine, flesh and blood. The setting sun turned the barn to orange and later to crimson. Something about it seemed too good to be false. I sensed inklings of a symphony behind which might be a score and a conductor. I sensed a story with a wooing author. I felt something like Tolkien's enchanted vision. But here the rightful owner of the One Ring was the Lord of Light, not of darkness. The bearer of that ring to rule the spheres was some sort of wild and relentless lover who could find us anywhere. Moon and tides danced together. Creatures were changing ships. Some were off to sleep and others waking. It struck me that, in fact, this happens everywhere, every day, every year. We live on a life-giving planet in a vast solar system, which is just one member of a still more vast and finely tuned universe. And we have minds and hearts that are free to reject or to receive the gift and the giver of it all, to join the dance or to wait it out. In that hour, there was too much beauty to be comfortable, to pay the weak compliment of aesthetic pleasure. It all seemed too orchestrated and conspicuous for me to do anything but be still and be silent. I felt it all as conspiracy, a breathing together, inviting me, but without me. What stopped and then sickened me that night beneath that starry host was the feeling that I could not participate. All creation, except for me, seemed to be joining in a cosmic chorus. The more I listened and watched, the more it seemed like worship. And yet of all God's creatures, I was on the outside, wanting in and yet standing against it in rebellion. Beauty can be painful to bear alone. But I was the one who had chosen aloneness, the one who had run away after a great loss. The universe could sing and dance the night away for all I cared. My own story seemed flat and cold, the midwinter indeed bleak and unending. How could I enter back in to God's presence with this enchanted symphony of the creation around me? How could I trust the one behind it all? The answer came unbidden and clear. I was to choose life, to join the dance, by forgiving. Only by doing so could I enter into that abundant reality which I really did desire. I had been dismembered from life by my unwillingness to forgive. I was now invited to be remembered to life by choosing forgiveness. Whether I bent my knees or my legs were broken for me, I don't know. I fell to the wet earth, forehead down in mud and snow, fighting nausea, reminding myself to breathe. I was my own inquisitor. In what story had I been living? Was it the story of life in the garden before the fall or after? Was it a story which accepted, even expected, the epic movements of creation, fall, and redemption? Was it a story with time depth and future hope? Or was I stuck in the minuscule cell of self and moment? I began by asking for mercy for myself, and then I began to forgive a betrayal that felt like a primal wound. Bitterness is like salt water at high tide, forcing us to shrink back, to retreat into safe places and sorrow. But that evening on the ocean, someone changed the tides in me. He welcomed me back in. I slowly rose and joined that symphony of worship, of gratitude, of life. When his light and love floods us, it shifts the boundaries of our being. Our hearts get bigger. Our minds begin to heal. I was grafted into the tree of life, brought into the land of the living. Sometimes, when the sun sinks low enough, when the glow of crimson captures my attention, I behold its light, its glory, if you will, its face. On the hike out to the tide that night, I saw the world in the warm light of the sun setting behind me. On the way home, I saw the sun itself. Soggy and content before entering the dark woods and then the warm cabin, I looked back across that sanctuary, and the red barn was lit from within. This hour hike in the woods, something very particular, very granular, very private, which I never for years could have imagined writing about, was one of the things on my graph that popped up as a moment, that a flipping of the switch from fear to love that redirected my future, because I began the discipline of listening, of paying attention to the author of the story and of the universe. And I simply, in the smallest, most childlike way, responded. And so I thank you for doing that today with your own life, and to pay attention to the ways in which the Lord wants to move you forward and move your story forward, and encourage you to see writing as a way of spiritual discipline, and also really spiritual direction, isn't it, too? And a path of growth into a very good future. So with that, I think we're about exactly 3 o'clock, and thank you for coming. There are several copies of this too in up front.
Thanks. Great.